Why? Why record my life story? Why shoot it out into the podcast cosmos? Why would anyone want to do that? Why should you listen? Why would anyone give a fuck? All excellent questions. My name is Henry. You can call me Hank. This is the saga of the highs and lows of my life. I believe everyone has a story to tell, where the extraordinary is shrouded in the ordinary. This story is mine. Episode 3, When the Clouds Roll In. There was 12-year-old me, laying on my bed, finding solace in Stained and Eminem albums on my portable CD player. My family had just moved in from a stay at a crap hotel to a 2-bedroom apartment in Round Lake, Illinois. We were eating from food pantries and off of food stamps. Barbie and Henry Sr. tried to make ends meet, but often they didn't. 12-year-old me didn't feel loved at home. See, the deterioration wasn't just financial. Barbie and I didn't really get along anymore. For now, we'll just say that she had issues that collided with mine, and the broken pieces stuck in me like shrapnel. Henry Sr. worked hours that kept him awake while I was sleeping. That is, when he had a job. Compounding this, I hadn't hugged him in a few years. Let's just say, we didn't have much of a relationship. 12-year-old me didn't feel comfortable in his own skin. I can remember days at school feeling like everyone saw no value in me. I remember particular moments of embarrassment, feeling like I was on the outside looking in. I had no real friends, and I found myself stuck in a performance-based merry-go-round trying to make people like me so I could grasp the gold ring. 12-year-old me was keenly aware that the wonder years were over and the clouds were rolling in.
Drugs are menacing our society. They're threatening our values and undercutting our institutions.
When I was a kid, I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Where were you the first time you partook of the devil's lettuce? I was in Paul's room. Paul was a pimply-faced guy who wore the cool Billabong shirts and JNCO pants I wanted to wear. His older sister was hot and, for whatever reason, liked to eat cereal on the couch in her underwear. So I decided Paul and I should be friends. I stared in amazement as Paul opened a sandwich bag that had a few lime green marijuana buds in it and took them out and started to remove the seeds and stems. Paul then proceeded to pack what I would later discover was called a bowl. He then opened his window, secured his white box fan on the sill with the air blowing out. He then grabbed a lighter and a contraption he called an asshole. This asshole was a MacGyvered work of pothead genius. It was an empty toilet paper roll stuffed with dryer sheets. He lit the bowl, Obama'd the smoke, and breathed it out through the asshole into the fan, and thus it sucked out the window. The room still smelt like we ran over a skunk and tried to cover the smell with fresh linen, but we were too high to care. It was my turn. I took a hit and repeated the process as I saw Paul do it. I remember I was stuck. I really couldn't move, but I felt good. And I decided that I for sure wanted him to be my best friend. We spent the whole summer between 7th and 8th grade doing the same thing every day. We'd buy an eighth of marijuana, smoke a bowl, walk to KFC, walk back, smoke another bowl, and listen to music. That is, until one night his dad showed up at the apartment, screaming at my mom and dad about how Paul had stolen his debit card to his savings account and spent all his money. And that pimply-faced coward told his dad that I helped steal the money. His dad wanted me to pay half of it back. Fear paralyzed me as I stood there with six eyes staring through my soul. All I was thinking was, one, Paul, gifts are gifts, no takebacks, watch Judge Judy. Two, how disappointing it was that I was never going to watch his older sister eat Fruity Pebbles in her underwear again. And three, where was I going to get more weed? I looked Paul's dad straight in the eyes and said, "Sir, sorry, but I had no idea." Then, Mom kindly told Paul's dad to go pound sand and close the door. I think most people have an idea of what their first time having sex would be like. I really don't think it ends up as we imagine for most of us. That being said, one night, I went for a drive with my friend Bob, his girlfriend, and a chick named Nicole. Nicole drove the 1990-ish Chevy Blazer with me in the passenger seat while my buddy got it on in the back seat with his girlfriend. Now, just meeting Nicole 20 minutes earlier, I sarcastically asked her if it was our turn when they were done. With a shrug and a half smile, she muttered, "Sure." Now I laughed, thinking that she got the joke. Then, a short while later, when the two lovebirds completed their task in the back seat, she pulled over and told everyone to switch spots. I was like, okay, I'll play along. And I jumped into the back seat with Nicole. My buddy's girlfriend started to drive us all to McDonald's. Nicole looks at me confused and said, "Well, are you gonna kiss me?" This was the moment I realized she was serious. I didn't think twice. I dove on her and kissed her. I mean, I had seen enough real sex on HBO by now that I was confident I could pull this off. So we awkwardly wrestled each other's clothes off and I porked her in the back seat on the way to McDonald's. After what I'm sure was the best sexual experience of her life, we grabbed burgers and the girls dropped Bob and I off at his house. The next day, Nicole and her friend showed up at Bob's. And in the light of day, I discovered something horrific about Nicole that I had missed the night before. One, she was 18. I was 12. Number two, she was reminiscent of Skeletor with mascara. And three, she had one of those doubly chick mustaches, not like full-blown handlebar, but enough 5 o'clock shadow that I threw up a little in my mouth. I don't understand why Nicole was so confused when I asked her to leave me alone, but Nicole, I'm sorry. I just couldn't do the stash, boo. One day, I came home to discover that my dad had moved out. My world fell apart. I was confused. I was angry. And I lashed out at Mom when she told me to stay out of it. The next few weeks were full of unkind words, screaming matches, and silences. I remember the rage and loneliness inside me. And I remember the pain on Mom's face. Dad rented a room, which I got to visit once, He'd also visit me at the bus stop to tell me that he missed me. Which was great. Till I jumped in the truck to talk to him and saw a box of condoms in the center console. He tried to explain how he met someone at work and it was just sex, but I couldn't hear him over the anger. I told him I loved him. Smiled. And got out of the truck. I met Joker in 8th grade. Joker was a Mexican kid in my class and invited me over to get high. I didn't realize it then, but the moment I walked into Joker's garage would change the trajectory of my life for years to come. When I walked into the smoky garage, the sound of 90s freestyle house hit my ears about as fast as the strong smell of marijuana. I was greeted by two other guys. Smokey, Joker's best friend, and Diablo, Joker's older brother. I sat down on the weight bench, and Joker handed me a 40-ounce Budweiser. We all drank, and smoked, and laughed. I remember feeling for the first time that a group of friends accepted me. We spent a lot of time in that garage. And I also got to befriend many other kids with stereotypical Mexican gang member nicknames like Shorty, Bandit, and Lazy. I soon found out that they all formed a smoking crew named Living on Chronic, or LOC. This crew was connected with the Chicago-based Latin Kings, which Lazy and Diablo were already a part of. I was the only white kid. But either way, when I felt like I was falling off the high wire of the circus that was my family life, LOC was my safety net. After a few months, Joker asked if I would like to be the only white member allowed to join LOC. I wanted to, more than anything. With that, he taught me the secret handshake and started calling me brother. Now, LOC wasn't a gang, we just got intoxicated and talked about what we would do if a girl would actually hang out with us. But the clouds kept rolling till a storm engulfed me. This storm would give birth to Looney, and we'll meet him next time. The events in our lives sow seeds. The seeds, whether thrown from within or without, take root and grow into vines. These stretch throughout the totality of our lives. Some are life-giving, some need to be pruned, others need to be uprooted. All of them make us who we are. Thanks for listening. I would love to hear any feedback that you have. You can send all feedback to feedback@henryjasper.com. This show is produced by H. Jasper Marketing. Find all information about your marketing needs at henryjasper.com.